So this afternoon is another opportunity to reflect. On the way it is, because right now this is the experience. It's like this. So this is being aware of the way it is rather than thinking of the past or the future. So we tend, like in cold weather, for example, we can think, oh, it's really cold today, and this is what we add to the moment, because the temperature's like this, cold is like this, but then we think of terms of, we may not like the cold. Then we complicate it, we suffer from our attitudes towards the way it is. So in terms of human experience, it's always the way it is. Whatever is happening, says whether it's success or failure, being appreciated or being despised, being accepted or rejected, being ignored, is the way it is. So there's no bhavana or meditation, right meditation is not difficult, because everything teaches us. Having to live within these very sensitive forms for a lifetime, because that's what we're experiencing, sensitivity through form, through the senses. And sensitivity doesn't mean just pleasure or pain, all kind of levels of pleasure, pain happen to us during the day and night. But I found it very important to recognize that the life we live in these forms is about sensitivity. And in the intellect, we can idolize, you know, a perfectly perfect climate, and where everybody's living in harmony, everybody's equal, fair, just, right, good, beautiful. And that's not the way it is. That's what we would like, what we wish for. So somebody the other day asked me if I believed in the Deva realms, the Brahma realms, the cosmology of Theravada Buddhism, and do you believe in the Dawadingsa heaven, the Manarati Dusit, on and on like that, and these different levels of pleasant abidings. And, you know, so then in terms of their belief, because that's not the way it is here and now. So all you can answer is, I don't know. There's never been to the Dawadingsa heaven. But people believe it's a word, it's a pleasurable state, but then we create, I want to be reborn, I'm going to do a lot of good actions in this life to be reborn in the Dusita heaven, which is even better. And so in terms of better, and then we try to imagine what it's like to not have such a corporal form, a more ethereal body, which we can imagine made out of ether and air, and is very beautiful, and it doesn't experience pain, and it's happy. And that's imagery. We can believe that, you know, that creates a desire to be reborn in such a pleasant state. But it is a belief. That's the way it is. Beliefs come and go. They can be, ethereal beliefs in an overriding deity, a god that creates. We can believe in that. But that's imagery again, isn't it? It's an image that we think, why do people suffer? Why did God create suffering if he's a loving, kind, patriarchal form? Did God create dinosaurs? Why would he create such hideous monsters? And so the mind speculates about believing in a loving, kind, compassionate, creating deity is, you know, has its comforts in moments, but then we're challenged because experience isn't always like that. Experience is like this. This is experience that we're all having at this moment. It's like this. And when I do this, that it always reminds me of the silence that's ever present. I call it the sound of silence, or the silence, or the cosmic pulse, or universal pulse, whatever name we want to name it. But it doesn't have a name, but it is here and now. And in that silence, then we can manifest images, beautiful images or horrific ones. So humanity tends to live its life in imagination. Its reality is all based on concepts, on ideas, on ideals, on negative feelings that, you know, life is terrible. We can believe in satanic forces that are secretly destroying the human race. There's a lot of theories now going about. Conspiracy theories about the satanic forces, the dark state. What are these? What is the dark state right now? Sitting here in Amaravati Temple, it's a concept. And that's the reality of it. It's can you see it? Or, you know, somebody tells you about it, or you read about it. Or sometimes our lives are dark and painful. But is that a kind of permanent dark state that is trying to destroy us, or are we just believing that? We believe it because some authoritative figure told us that. So the humanity tends to believe. And belief is a created state. And we can believe life is good and happy and because at moments it is good and happy. But it doesn't stay that way. It's not good and happy are positive terms that make us feel good and give us confidence, sense of security, where the deep state, the dark forces, the satanic forces that we can't see but we've heard about, and that gives us a sense of paranoia, of fear, of anxiety. So being sensitive is like this. We're subject to all kinds of influences through these senses, through the brain. You know, we're victims of conditioning. So when we talk, when we point to the end of suffering, the Nirodha, or the end of suffering, is always here and now. It's not about the future or when you die. What happens when an arahant dies? Does he or she go somewhere? You know, where is the soul of Ajahn Chah now at this moment? You know, so we can speculate, was he an arahant? And some people believe he is, and some people doubt that, or even don't have a clue of what an arahant would be. But these are concepts, and they're created. And conspiracy theories are created, creations of the human mind. Just as ideals, just as the heavenly states, heaven and hell, are creations of the human mind. And this is reflecting on the way it is when all conditions are impermanent. Then that we can believe that. You know, it's easy to kind of make sense on a logical level. All conditions are impermanent. But in Pavana, we actually go beyond just believing what the Buddha taught to finding out whether it's true or false. Are all conditions impermanent? Well, the Buddha said all conditions are impermanent, so pay sankhara anicca, that sankharas are conditions, phenomena, and they're all impermanent. And how does that affect you? You know, we use the word sankhara, which is a Pali word, and then impermanent, anicca. Nietzsche means impermanent, changing. And so we intellectually can appreciate that teaching. But bhavana is not about believing in Buddha's teachings, but the teachings are meant to be directional signs to the here and now. So understanding suffering and the first noble truth, there is suffering, it should be understood. That's a direct pointing. That's not a doctrinal teaching that we believe in. It's not a pessimistic, negative view of life. Life is just misery and suffering. It's not to create this kind of depressing state where we just think life is just about old age, sickness, death, and despair, and anguish, and loss, and fear, and then we get depressed, we become cynical, and that's suffering, because these are all concepts that we cling to and believe. We believe them because it seemed like that, or somebody told us that, or that's how we interpret the first noble truth. But then the point, the insight into the first noble truth is to understand suffering. So to understand suffering, you know, we can look outward and see homelessness in London and wars in various countries in the world, and just being cold rather than warm, or be having COVID symptoms. And we can say that having COVID, having a cold, having the flu is suffering. But that's not understanding suffering. It's merely labeling the experience, unpleasant experience, with the word, I am suffering from the flu. Where the investigation is when the body has the flu, that's a name we give that kind of condition, or has COVID, it's like this. Then it stops the mind from thinking any further about, you know, is it dangerous or will I die or I better wear a mask or not mix with the Sangha because I don't want to spread it. Then we get all kinds of ideas, concepts to protect others is kind of noble ideas, considerate, compassionate. To be afraid, to be frightened by it, wondering whether you're going to die or whatever. And I remember myself having tremendous fear of getting cancer, even when I was young. So I get some kind of ailment, and then I think, I said, cancer. Because cancer is the quintessential horror show that we, you know, there's something that in your own body that is going to destroy you. So that can make one paranoid or depressed. Or we can blame, why did God create cancer? And why did he create me with cancer? It's not fair. You know, so the mind proliferates around experience we like or don't like or want or don't want, accept or don't accept. But in understanding suffering, understanding it doesn't mean forming concepts about it, but directly observing. That's what we call sati sampajanya, sati panya, mindfulness, wisdom, intuition. Suddenly, rather than just reacting out of habit, one is observing, the witness to whatever experience you're having at this moment. Like the cold weather is like this. Having a fever is like this. Being warm is like this. So everything's teaching us. The experiences we have through this sensitive form, if we're willing, if we're developing wisdom, then wisdom will show us that we learn from whatever happens to us, whatever we experience through this form. You have to admit, is the way it is. For example, when you argue that this moment should be something, you can say it should be something else, but at this moment is like this. So understanding suffering is noticing, like old age is like this. And I have macular degeneration, which is a disease of the eyes. It's like this. And so there's no suffering in that. Well, I suffer if I don't want it to be like this. I start worrying, what if I go blind? You know, macular degeneration can create blindness. And that's in the future. I'm not blind, but I could be blind. And then I start suffering as a person. But if I don't do that, then if in the future I do go blind, it's like this. It's the same practice. It doesn't change according to the conditions of the body through the senses. So this is the end of suffering, is through investigating experience, not in terms of right and wrong, good or bad, not any of those kind of conditions, but being a witness to the way it is, in which your habits come up in consciousness, like we can start complaining about the weather and we can observe that, grumbling about the cold or the English climate or it's too hot, too cold, or too rainy, too wet. And that's conceptual proliferation, that's thinking, you know, about what we want or don't want as we identify ourselves with a sensitive form. So also ask yourself, are you really a sensitive form? Is this body really what you are? Your true self, your real home? And of course, most human beings believe that they are their bodies. And so there's so much controversy around gender, race, things like this that because bodies are different. Genders are different. And then we identify with gender, what happens? We suffer because is it happiness to be a man, to be a male? Is that the end of suffering? Or be a female, is that the end of suffering? You know, is that the answer is to be reborn in some other, in the opposite gender? So we create suffering and we have causes we fight for and shout around and protest because life isn't fair. Samsara, or the sensory world, is not about fairness. It's not about how everything should be according to an ideal, but it's about change and unsatisfactoriness. So the First Noble Truth can be easily translated as unsatisfactoriness. Because when you look at your life, all the conditions are changing. Every day, you know, like here in the UK, we have definite changes in the seasons, just the remarkable changes from spring to summer to autumn to winter. Visual changes. Then climate change, the icebergs are melting. And then there's a lot of controversies around climate change now. So who's right and who's wrong? Is there something really called climate change in some kind of threatening way? Or, you know, we can make a case for that through reason and logic, through observation. Or is it just conditions changing and we can not worry about it or not change anything, but still live our lives in the way we're used to? Or there's all kinds of possibilities, views and opinions about what's right and wrong and who's to blame. All this is what we call conceptual proliferation, this proliferating thoughts. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not condemning it, because that's what thinking does. It proliferates. But behind the thinking, here and now, is the silence. The sound of silence. And we don't notice that usually because of conceptual proliferation, our tendency to be thinking all the time. You know, how many of you do when you practice silent meditation, just caught in continual thinking, obsessive thinking? Because that's what we're habituated to think, to take sides, to believe in what we're told. To cling to good and bad, right and wrong, because they're not equal, are they? One is better than the other. Good is better than bad. So we want the good and we don't want the bad. And that's suffering, because good and bad are labels we give to experience that we have, or what we believe, what's right and what's wrong. But in the silence behind good and bad, it's neither good nor bad. It's peaceful, it's joyful. You can call it unconditioned love. It has no preferences. Now, being sensitive means that we desire pleasure and we fear pain. So this is a desire realm that we experience, what we see. We desire to see beautiful objects. And we don't want to see ugly objects. So we decide what's beautiful, what's ugly. Some people, very refined people, have very high standards of beauty, refined beauty. Others are not so specialized. So beauty can be refined beauty, or coarse, or common. We have these kind of names, or ugliness, it's just plain ugliness. Is there refined ugliness, or neither? I don't think like that. The word ugly just means don't want it. So just noticing this when these kind of concepts arise, in experience. It's our habits, how we're conditioned. We're victims of our conditioning, of the ego. We form an ego, a sense of our self-worth, when we're a child. We live in a society that's very materialistic, based on right and wrong and fair and unfair and idealistic, but has a lot of corruption, unfairness, inequalities. We can endlessly criticize things that we see and hear about in the news. News is not really about equality and love, but about what's wrong, who's corrupt, who's a criminal, who betrayed the country, who's a traitor. So the mass media informs us about what to believe or disbelieve, so we have preferences like BBC or Fox News or, you know, different news agencies that are right on the right side or the left side. And they inform us of what's right and wrong and who's good and who's bad, about the evil forces of the opposite. And we tend, and that has an effect on our experience in the present moment. So it doesn't mean we don't experience these things, but we're aware of experience. It's changeable. It's like phantoms, like things that arise and cease in the mind, come and go. And who can be aware of that? This is the way out of suffering, is through awareness of it, not trying to get rid of anything, but using experience that each one of us must have in our lifetime as a way of understanding suffering and its causes. And that leads to silence, nirodha. And nirodha is here and now. It's not something you create. It's uncreated. It's not a sankhara. Silence is not a sankhara. It's not created or formed. It's not a condition. But it is here and now, even in the noise of a present moment. So the insight is to let go of sankharas, not to get rid of them, to no longer be caught in just blind belief and attachments, views, opinions, preferences, concepts, because they're all sankharas created. And we attach to them. That attachment is done out of ignorance. And we identify with what we're not. And then we wonder why, what's the purpose of life? What's the meaning? What do the Buddhists believe is the ultimate meaning of life? We want to have a concept or a belief, and life has a purpose and some important meaning. We were born here for a purpose. In our life, we want to have it meaningful. So these are words, purpose and meaning, they're sankharas. But who is aware of these words? Because when I think my life has a purpose, was I created in order to become a Buddhist monk? Was my destiny, my personal destiny, to meet Lumbar Cha? You know, I can believe that or disbelieve it. But it's not about believing or disbelieving anymore. It's about at this moment that those are concepts that arise and cease. And when you do let go of everything, then the silence is where you abide, in silence. It's your real home, is what you are. And it's perfect. It's not created, not, it's not about right and wrong or what should or shouldn't be. It's not about ideals or praising or blaming, but it's here and now. Santitiko, akaliko, ehi prasiko, upanayiko, budgetang, waitidapo, and you need to be realized each individually. Like, I can go on endlessly talking about it. But this talking that I do is merely to encourage you to wake up and realize yourself, to have the budget and to know this through insight rather than through believing in what I say or doubting what I say. Because you may doubt me, you may think, oh, he's just talking nonsense. And that's a condition, and if that's what you feel, then be aware that's a feeling, a judgment. It's like this. And it ceases. So this is where you can prove to yourself, like these Four Noble Truths, they're not something esoteric or remote, because suffering is the most obvious reality for all human beings. Life is suffering. Having these bodies and these senses that are so easily damaged, so easily destroyed. Emotionally, we can become wounded through being misunderstood or rejected by society. And so these forms are like this, and the ego is very, seems very personal. You know, what I think, how I feel about life is so important to me as a person. My views, my opinions, me and mine. Even though there might be very good ones, I might be very intelligent, very wise, with all the right views, but they're still views. And if I cling to these ideas that I'm something, then I'm clinging to sankhara again, to a phenomenon. Past lives, what is that? That's a belief that I was somebody in the past, but the past is a memory. And past lives, I have no memory of past lives. I was told many years ago by a Chinese master that we were Chinese monks teaching Vinaya in China, previous life. Well, that's a very flattering thing to believe in. You know, that's better than other possibilities. So, if I cling to that, but do I believe it or disbelieve? It's not a matter of believing or disbelieving. It's just not knowing. I have no memory of being with this monk in a previous life in China. Absolutely no memory. But I've been told that, so, you know, then I could go around saying, making a case for that. But that's not the way it is in terms of experience here and now. Another comical incident was there was a woman that used to come here who would see auras. And so she wanted to see my aura. So I met with her and she saw my aura and she said, "You were Lumpa Cha's grandmother." Well, that's a very nice, flattering. I didn't feel insulted, but it was, you know, do I believe that? Actually, I don't. But if she believed it, or she wanted to believe it, or she just wanted to make me happy, or whatever, I don't know. But that's not Dhamma about my aura. You know, because how many of you can see my aura? And I don't know whether I have an aura or not. I can't see it. But I am aware of this present moment. It's like this. And I'm aware of the silence that's here and now. So all these past life images, no matter how flattering or desirable they might be, they're sankharas. They come and go. You can't sustain them. You can believe them or disbelieve them. So this is like encouraging us to wake up. And so Buddha means awakened one. Awake to Dhamma, the way it is. And then it's clearly explained that all conditions are impermanent. And Dhamma is not personal. There's no person that has, you know, a person is a condition. So in the book, Don't Take Your Life Personally, is good advice. Because we do take our lives very personally. That means that we're important, or as individuals, as what we think or feel or our experience. We're right or wrong. Living in the Sangha of good people where, you know, we expect every monk, every nun to think the same as me. You know, I want you all to be carbon copies of me. I'd be a narcissist, which is a common word these days. But whatever me is, you know, ever I see myself as an ego, as a separate person, it's an illusion because it changes. When you're in the silence of reality, there's no person. It's not personal. There's no language. Just contemplate how we give so much importance to languages, to concepts. So we refer to the scriptures, to the Bible, to the Torah, to scriptural teachings that tell us what's right and what's wrong. So there's arguments about, what the Bible really, is it true or false? Is it just myth or is it made up? Is it right or wrong in the Old Testament or the New Testament? And endless arguments about scriptural or interpretations of suttas. The suttas in the Pali Canon, are they all right? Are they absolute right? They're absolutely right. Are all the scriptures in Mahayana Buddhism, are they right or wrong? Or is everything is just the Pali scriptures are right? We can take sides between the different forms of Buddhism. But what is that? That's suffering, because we see something that we're attached to, that we've been told is absolutely right, and that if nothing agrees with that, then it's absolutely wrong. Is right and wrong, are they absolutes? So silence is an absolute, absolute reality. It's here and now. It's uncreated. It's not a sankhara. It's not a phenomenon. And this is what we realize through awareness, through investigating. And so this particular style of training here is we try to offer it to encourage each one of you to investigate your life. To ask yourself the questions, to find out who you really are. So I offer this as a reflection for today.